Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you for waiting. At this time, we would like to welcome everyone to Arauco's fourth quarter 2018 results conference call. Today, we have with us Mr. Gianfranco Truffello, CFO of Arauco. We would like to inform you that this event is being recorded, and all participants will be in a listen-only mode during the company's presentation. After the company's remarks are completed, there will be a Q&A session. At that time, further instructions will be given. Should any participant need assistance during this call, please press star zero to reach the operator. Before proceeding, let me mention that this presentation contains forward-looking statements that are based on the beliefs, assumptions, and expectations of the management of the company based on currently available information. They involve risks and uncertainties because they relate to future events or expectations and therefore depend on circumstances that may or may not occur in the future. Investors should understand that general economic conditions, industry conditions, and other operating factors could also affect the future results of Arauco and could cause results to differ materially from those expressed in such forward-looking statements. For further discussion of these risks and uncertainties, investors should refer to the quarterly and annual Arauco filings with the Chilean CMF and U.S. SEC. The company undertakes no obligation to publicly update or revise any forward-looking statements due to new information or future developments. Now, I'll turn the conference over to Mr. Gianfranco Truffello, CFO of Arauco. Mr. Gianfranco, you may begin your conference.
Okay. Thanks, everyone, for attending this call. As usual, we will be looking at the numbers for the year 2018, particularly the last quarter, and we will review a little bit deeper the different segments of the company, both wood products and forestry, and then we'll have some space for the material facts and news, and we will end, as usual, with a round of Q&A. So if we can start on page number four, there is a first snapshot of the results for the quarter, and you can see there that we have a quarter with a reduction of about 11% in revenues, going from $1.5 billion to a little bit less than $1.4 billion. Our EBITDA went down 33% from $513 million to $343 million, and our net income went down from $221 million to $70 million. In terms of looking at the whole year perspective, we had an increase of almost 14% in revenues, almost $6 billion for the whole year. Our EBITDA was 37% higher than last year as a whole year, reaching $1,850 million, and our net income was $727 million. That is 170% more than the result that we had on year 2017. In terms of leverage, our leverage stood more at the same level of 1.9x, back on a net debt that was almost identical to the one obtained at the end of the third quarter. If we move to page five and we look at a little bit more detail on revenues, you can see there the decrease of 11.3%. That is based on a decrease in the pulp business of $133 million and $50 million less in revenues on the wood products division. The decrease in the pulp business is explained basically by a reduction in sales volume in the quarter of 12% compared to the preceding quarter and a slight decrease in prices of about 4%. In terms of wood products, the decrease was explained by a decrease in sales volume of 7% and prices that stood equal to last quarter. Cost of sales decreased 1% or $10 million, basically because of a reduction in volume of sales, compensated by some increase in unit cost of production and pulp that we see there of 13% in softwood, 10% in hardwood, and 7% in unbleached softwood that are explained basically by one-time effects that we can explain later and some effects in transfer prices from the forestry division to the pulp division and also because of the reduction in pulp produced we had an increase in fixed costs because of less volume produced. So cost of sales going from $940 to $927 million. Now moving to page six, in administrative expenses, we have a decrease of 2%. The main account going down here is wages and salaries, reducing by 8%. And this is explained basically by an adjustment in accounting related to the Macisa Brasil acquisition that we reversed a charge that we have in salaries of $5.4 million. In terms of distribution costs, they decreased 3.5% or $5 million, and we have reductions in freight costs, again, because of lower exports, especially to Asia, and offset by some increases in selling costs and some bad debt provisions in the U.S. and some export taxes implemented in Argentina, even though this account only went out for $5 million. Now moving to page seven, other income had a reduction of 35% of $12 million. And here we have a couple of effects, negative effects in the changes, gain from changes in fair value of biological assets, decrease about $20 million because of a change in the model of valuation that was done in December, and compensated by some increase in other income that is basically explained by some indemnifications that we obtained from electrical companies in some lawsuits that we had. In other expenses, we have an increase of $26 million, and the main explanation here in other expenses is basically some accounting charges for impairment provisions for property, plant, and equipment done in, especially in the Arauco mill. About $10 million of those are explained by that accounting charge. And then we have some provisions for forestry fire losses that increased by $2.5 million compared to the third quarter. Page 8 is a summary of all that we have talked about. We can see here that we have some increases in financial income, for example, for $5 million to $8.8 million. This is basically explained by a higher cash position, explained by issuance of bonds that we did at the end of in November last year. So we had higher cash position, plus some increases in the yield of our deposits that we have obtained, increased the financial income. Financial costs also going a little bit up, again explained by the issuance of bonds and higher financial expenses in this quarter because of higher debt position. In terms of other income, we have an increase of $14 million. This is explained by a goodwill generated by the acquisition in Brazil that we booked a gain of $14 million by the valuation of those assets that we acquired last year. Then we have a slight decrease in exchange rate differences from minus $6 million to minus $4.2 million. And a decrease in the income tax of $26 million. That creates a net income of $70 million for the quarter. Again, the full-year net income was almost a record for Arauco, $726 million, an increase of 170%. Page number nine, retrospective about our EBITDA results, then you can see there that we had a reduction, of course, in the fourth quarter that we'll explain when we talk about the pulp division. You can see there the EBITDA by business, 286, pulp, 92, wood and forestry minus 11, and the adjustments in corporate of 24. The margin of EBITDA was 25%, a reduction from the 33% that we had on quarter three of last year. Pulp adjusted EBITDA decreased by 27% because of the decrease in sales volume and a decrease in prices of 4.2%. And wood product adjusted EBITDA decreased by 12% due to decrease in sales volume, basically. Now moving into the different segments, if we can start with page 11, talking about the pulp business. Here is we are showing the inventory levels and the graph of the indexes of NBSK and BHKP. We can see the numbers up to November. Well, we had prices that had a differential of $174 as index prices, and the spread was 180 last call. What we can see here that at the end of the year, we had a change in trend in the pulp industry, especially in November, December, and sales volume decreased in our case 11%, and in some other producers more than that, and that created a high increase in inventories at levels up to December. We can see there that softwood went from 33 days to 41 days, but in the case of BHKP, hardwood, the increase was very big, reaching 57 days of supply, especially at the ports in China. Some other Brazilian competitors decreased their sales around 30%, increasing their volume, the stock volume, very high. And that created some uncertainty in terms of prices that went down. We're going to see in the graph of the prices that we realized. So let's move to page 12. Here we can see the decrease in EBITDA of 27%, and there you can see that the volume went down 11%, prices 4.2, that's invoice prices. But in the graph at the right side, at the bottom, you can see that the movement of prices was very big, and we were at sub October with prices near $900 for BSKP, for softwood, and $800 for hardwood, and prices reduced about $200 for softwood to $680 in December. And in the case of hardwood, they went from $790 to $680 per ton. With a lot of reduction in volume for other producers, we were able to not reduce so much the volumes sold, and we had to reduce the prices, you know, to keep selling. And basically the reason behind that was the trade war between the U.S. and China that generated uncertainty in the demand for Chinese products that demand paper and packaging going to the U.S., and that created some overstock of paper packaging and stopped the buying of pulp. That hurt our sales of imports to China. In the case of Europe, the trend was less aggressive. China is always a little bit behind in terms of the trend of China, and so we didn't see the reduction in prices so sharp that we saw in China. That was the main reason for the reduction in EBITDA that at the end affected the whole company. You can see in page 13 that also we had a reduction in production from 978 to 901, but that was basically due to more annual program maintenance in our mills, especially some mills that are quite big, as Arauco 2, Valdivia, and Montes del Plata. And that created less production, and so our stock didn't go that high because the reduction in sales was compensated with less production. Now, looking at page 14, a little bit of outlook about what happened after December. And what we saw was a period in January and February with stable prices, a lot of uncertainty about the volume, some producers not willing to sell, especially resilience, holding inventory. But we kept on selling, trying to not increase inventories, and we saw that those prices are there. Basically, we kept the $680 for softwood, and we had to reduce a little bit hardwood from 680 to 650. Then we maintained that. And finally, in March, the situation after the Chinese New Year changed a little bit, and we were able, and the whole market was able to raise prices, basically about $30 on each fiber, and we were able to raise prices for softwood to 710 and prices for hardwood to 680. So the forecast looks positive, and there's some positive feeling about the negotiation going on between the U.S. and China, so we think that that could go well. And since the Brazilian producer, especially Suzano, was holding on inventory, that created a better environment in terms of less supply coming to the markets, and prices started to go up. In Europe, as usually, the things are lagging a little bit, but since they are seeing increases in price in China, probably the prices will not decrease from the levels they are. Right now, there's a gap between the European price on a net basis and Chinese price, about $50, and that should stay because they are not going to go down because they're seeing prices going up in China. So the question mark will be how fast the big accumulated inventories in the ports in China will start to go down. Suzano and Brazilian producers have announced some maintenance in meal, so that will help reduce the inventories, and that will determine the price movement in the future. We think that there is room for another round of raising prices in April. That's not closed yet, and we'll see, but we think that the environment is good for another increase in prices. In terms of maintenance program for the company, we did the Nueva Aldea maintenance in January, the Licancé, which is a small mill, in February, and we are doing Constitución, Alto Paraná, and Arauco Line 1. Constitución, Alto Paraná in March, and in May we will do the stoppage of Arauco Line 1, which is 300,000 tonnage mill. Now moving to page 15 in wood product business. Here we have a reduction in EBITDA of 12%, but an increase of 15% compared to a year ago. And as I explained the decrease is basically explained in the case of composite panels of about a reduction of 7% in volume, and in the case of solid wood, about the same 8% in decrease in volume, but with stable prices. Here we have seen, especially in some timber, some more difficult market in China because of some oversupply and also because of the lower demand, again caused by the trade war between the U.S. And China. Remanufactured wood products are in balance with demand and supply, in this case considering a flat construction market in the U.S. And in terms of plywood sales, it was lower because we are facing more competition from companies in Brazil, in the same United States, and some coming from Asia, coupled with some seasonality in the Northern Hemisphere because of a very hard winter. In page 16, just some graph showing the production and sales volume in panels on timber and plywood. In terms of sales, we already talked about the reduction in volume. We can see a small reduction in the production of panels, some stable production in some timber, and the same in plywood. Now the outlook for the wood product business, page 17. Housing starts, the latest number we got was 1.2 million units. We have seen this number very stable for the many quarters, so we don't see any big growth here in housing starts. But we have seen some softening, especially in North America, here in this page, that represents 46% of our markets for the wood products, because of weather conditions and in the production and, the demand for particleboard and MDP. MDF is more challenging because of more oversupply coming into the market and the coming month. The remanufactured wood products, demand is expected to fall due to some slow construction market. We haven't seen any big pickup in construction and some seasonality effects in the first quarter. But we are expecting better volumes for the second quarter. Again, in plywood, we are seeing this market with more caution because of the oversupply that we talked before that's still coming from other producers. Next page, in what is Central and South America, that represents 40% of our demand, we have seen a good environment in Brazil. Last year was better than the year before. A little bit, yeah, we saw some recuperation in demand, and the first month of this year has been quite good. January was a very good year, really good month. February was a little bit more challenging, but because we have the Carnaval and all that going on, but we feel comfortable about the demand in Brazil. Our mills are working almost, let's say, full capacity, almost 90%, which is very good compared to what we had in the previous quarters. We had a very good integration of our Brazilian acquisition there. The two mills are working very good, and we have been able to capture synergies, and we're very happy with that integration. In Argentina, the situation is different. It has remained very tight and very difficult because the economic situation is very complicated and demand is not picking up. We are expecting to have positive margins and stable demand in melamine, but it's still very difficult because of the Argentina economic situation. In Chile, as usual, the demand for composite panels is expected to remain healthy, while we expect some slight increase in plywood and MDF demand. The rest of the market are more marginal. Asian Oceania, 12%. We expect to have some more complications because of the trade war in Asia and Oceania, but still with no relevant changes for other markets. And then Europe, which is very small, we expect stable markets for plywood, and also the Middle East has been positive, but it only represents 5% the whole market for those products. Page 19, now looking at the free cash flow, we can see there that we had a free cash flow negative of $64 million compared to $196 million of positive free cash flow for the third quarter. The main explanation here is that we had a lower EBITDA, of course, of, from 512 to 342. We had a compensating that a positive working capital variation of 141. The same more or less interest paid and received. The same for taxes, but here we had an increase in CapEx, basically because of the investments that we are doing, especially in dissolving pulp, in railing, and to some extent some payments of MAPA, but also because of that we paid dividends of $143 million in the, as we always do, provisory dividend in the month of December. So that created a free cash flow negative 64 that was compensated by some exchange rate inflation variation that helped us reach the same net debt, sorry, a reduction of net debt to 3.4 billion at the end of the year. Page 20, again, we have the net financial debt. Of 3.4 billion, that remains stable in compared to last quarter, and so maintaining the 1.9 times of leverage that we had last quarter. We have been going down for 3.5, and now we are at 1.9. The $3.4 billion of net debt is made of 536 of short-term debt, 3.9 of long-term debt, to a total financial debt of 4.5, less a cash position of $1 billion that we had at the end of the year. So leverage went down compared to a year ago because of the bigger year-to-date EBITDA and some reduction in net debt. Page 21. Our amortization schedule is shown there at the end of the year. And in terms of what we had to pay in year 19, it's $530 million. From those, bank debt is $246. The main part of the bank obligations, again, as usual, is the amortization of the ECA and IDB financing of Monte del Plata that each year take out about $170 million. And the rest is leasings and some small amortizations in Argentina and Brazil. In terms of bonds, we have to pay $290 million. The main part is an amortization that we have in July of $200 million for the 2019 Yankee bond. The rest is local bonds and some interest of those bonds. Now we move to the material facts and news. The first one in page 23. We, as you know, started with MAPA. We started the earthwork. You can see some pictures of the movement of the earth that we have done and a model of the project, how it will look after it's completed. As a reminder, the investment is projected to be $2.3 billion. We already have signed the main equipment contract with Andritz and Valmet. We started in February the earth moving works. We are now going to start negotiating and doing the bidding contest for the construction companies, for the assembly of the equipment and the main buildings. And we expect that the new line, line 3, will start operating on the second quarter of 2021, together with the shutdown of line 1 as it is approved in the environmental permit. Page 24. We completed finally the acquisition of Maciza Mexico at the end of January. Finally, this acquisition was for two of the three mills. We only acquired the mill in Durango and Zitácuaro. Maciza had to keep the mill in Chihuahua. And for that, we negotiated a reduction in price for the $245 million to the $160 million that we finally paid and acquired those assets. We acquired the companies, and we are controlling those assets in Mexico. In terms of Grayling, Grayling had its first panels produced on February 2019 as the first trials, and we expect that during March we'll start producing on a commercial quality in order to start selling the products from Grayling. The investment of this project was about $450 million. Capacity is 800,000 cubic meters of particle board. Page 25, we are continuing with the construction of the modification of the Valdivia mill in order to produce dissolving pulp. We have about 65% of advance in this project. The startup is expected to be at the end of this year. CapEx, about $190 million. And as you already know, this project will allow the company to enter into a new segment where we are going to be able to sell products at a higher value, higher price, and diversify our production and selling mix. And also, we will keep the flexibility to switch back to paper if in the future prices go the other way. Page 26. We, as an update of the forest fire season that is ending, we are now ending the summer in Chile, and as of March 15, sorry, at the end, at the, as of today, of in March, we have lost 1,579 hectares. That's an increase of about 1,000 hectares compared to the season of 2018, which was very good, but of course a significant decrease compared to the season that we had in 2017, where we lost 72,000 hectares. Why we have been very successful in fighting fires this season is because we have a program in place for this season with early warning plans to detect fire outbreaks, a lot of efforts in coordinating with communities, authorities, and fire brigades, and with other companies. And, of course, a lot of resources put into place. Here we are showing some of them. We have 1,600 brigades We have a lot of air fighting capacity, two S-64 Ukraine helicopters that can deliver 10,000 cubic liters of water in each throne, 13 Qual helicopters, 13 heliports, 13 airplanes, 23 airport runways, and a lot of effort in technology and coordination. You can see a photograph of the coordination center of dispatching airplanes and coordinated that we have in Concepcion. And some of the helicopters and the equipment that we have bought for fighting equipment on the ground. So a lot of effort, a budget of about $35 million, and we have been able to be very successful in a, let's say, more complicated season compared to last year as a country, but we have been suffering less proportionally. And finally, we issued bonds in October. Last year, we about $340 million. We went to the local markets, and we went with a $3 million UF 10-year term with 2.4% yield on UF, which is inflation-adjusted currency. And then we did $5.5 million UF at 25 years with a yield of 2.9%. This is, of course, part of the MAPA financing, and a small part, of course, and we will keep on going to the market most probably in order to finance this big acquisition that we are facing the coming 2 years. So with this, I'm ending my presentation, and I would like to open for any questions that you have. Thanks.
Thank you. The floor is now open for questions from investors and analysts. If you have a question, please press star 1 on your touchtone phone at this time. If at any point your question is answered, you may remove yourself from the queue by pressing star 2. Questions will be taken in the order that they are received. We do ask that when you pose your question, you pick up your handset to provide optimum sound quality. Please hold while we poll for questions. The first question comes from Tiago Losiego with Bradesco BBI. Please go ahead.
Thank you. I have a couple questions here. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Hello? Yeah, okay. So the first one on the pulp market, can you guys give us some color on how demand has been evolving in March specifically, and if you have at all any outlook for April, that would be very helpful. And within that question, also, if you could comment if you're seeing paper makers restocking pulp at all, and if they're the paper makers, if your clients, they are selling more paper to the end user. So just to try to understand what's going on in the chain here in March and April. The second question, also tied to the first one, what's your sense of inventory levels in the chain? We know that paper inventories, they had been at high levels before the Chinese New Year. I guess they still are. But what's your sense of those inventories now? And you also mentioned about the pulp inventory, that you think that the market will absorb the excess inventory from that is in the hands of the producers, especially Suzano. How long do you think that process will take? From our numbers here, we could be seeing an excess inventory on Suzano's hands of over 1 million tons. So that's quite a big number. This is just a rough estimate, but what's your sense about this this point here? Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, well, thanks for your question. Well, regarding the pulp demand for March, we were able to sell the whole volume. That's the most important part, even raising prices for $30. So that's a good sign. And also, we kept on selling good volume through January and February. So because, of course, we lower prices. So in that sense, it's a good sign. For April, we don't have any idea yet. I mean, we are just starting negotiating. You know that is the Chinese pulp week in the coming weeks, and that's going to be very important, and prices and volumes will be negotiated there. My feeling is that some price increases could be passed. I mean, because the decrease in prices was very big, so we think that and that could be a good moment in terms of the inventories in the paper producers. What I have heard is that the end of the year, beginning of January, there was some decrease in inventories that they had. I don't have visibility for February what happened, but what I've heard is that there was some decrease in the paper inventories. In terms of our inventories of pulp, went up a little bit in the last quarter, about 50,000 tons, which is not so big. I mean, we are roughly now probably 380,000 tons. I mean, considering all inventories in our mills, in the ports, in the ships, everywhere. So, and that is probably a little bit more than 1 month of demand, which is normal. It's nothing compared with the production. Sorry, but the inventories that we have heard that some Brazilian producers have, and also that helped us in the sense that we had less production also in the last quarter because of the maintenance of our mills. So that's why our inventory didn't go so high. And we kept on selling, going down with prices. So that's why our inventories are quite, healthy. In that sense, we don't have that problem. I don't know if that answers your question.
Yeah, Gianfranco, just if I may, to be 100% sure here, did you sell 100% of your production in March, or did you sell more than your production in March? Did you destock in March?
No, not really. More or less the same production. We didn't destock in March. I mean, it's still going on. March hasn't finished yet, and you know that we have some selling in Europe, but at least in January, in February, we were not selling more than our production. Let's hope that we can sell a little bit more than our production in March, but I don't expect a big difference.
But to say the least, you sold 100% of your production in the first quarter. That should be a reasonable statement.
Yeah, kind of, yes. More or less.
Okay.
Yeah. We're not accumulating a lot more inventories at the beginning of the year.
Fair enough. Thank you, Gianfranco.
Thank you.
The next question comes from George Staphos with Bank of America. Please go ahead.
Hi, everyone. Good day. Thanks for taking my question, Gianfranco. Maybe piggybacking on Tiago's questions, Gianfranco, to the extent that you can comment, what is the commentary from what you're hearing coming from the buyers here in this situation? They're obviously looking at the same inventory data that we're seeing. How are you being able to, raise pricing in an environment where there's, from a historical standard, relatively high inventories, and what's their commentary to the extent that you can comment? And I had a couple of follow-on questions.
Well, what we have seen is the decrease in the inventories that the paper producers had. So that helped us raise prices. I don't have much more information about the talks between the commercial people and their clients in terms of what they are, the discussions. Of course, I'll guess that there's a lot of people looking at the inventories of Suzano, because it's a big number going over there in the ports, and it's going to depend on Suzano's decision in order to decrease in what rate their inventory. So is they're going to wait, and I guess they will try, because they have 30% of the hardwood market. So a lot of expectation about what Suzano is going to do. But Suzano has proved, at least up to now, that they can wait. They have low financial costs, so I guess they'll stay that way. So, but I haven't been in the discussion directly, so I don't have the exact information about it.
Understood. To the extent that you would have a view on this and recognizing, it's going to be an imperfect view, where would you say the state of inventories are for, the paper makers and some of the other customers in China at this juncture? If you had mentioned it already, I apologize for having missed it in the first place.
The truth, I don't know where the level of inventory of paper. It's very difficult, statistics in China. You can see some things in the ports, and you can see the pulp that is stayed there, but to get a sense of the inventories of paper?
No. The inventories of the paper makers, inventories of pulp, that's what I was getting at.
I don't know the level exactly, but what I've heard is that the trend is that it is reducing, and that's why I think that we have been able to pass price increases.
Okay.
But I don't know exactly.
Two last ones for me, and I'll turn it over. One, there was a comment about an impairment in PP&E. Can you comment in terms of what view change triggered the impairment? And then if you could go a little bit more into detail in terms of what was driving the higher cash costs across your pulp menu, that would be great. Thank you.
Yes, yes. Well, there were a couple of impairments. Let's say three at least. One was an impairment of fixed assets in the Arauco mill, about $10 million. And that is, the impairment was done because we did a detailed study of the assets that we have recorded on the accounting system compared to the physical assets that were found on the ground. So we did an extensive work of many months going down. We did the same for Nueldea at the beginning of the year. Now we did for Arauco. And the assets that were on accounting system that we didn't find in the ground were those $10 million. This is for the whole Arauco complex, the two lines. And that impacted cost as other operating expenses. And that impact is about $30 per ton on softwood and about $13 for hardwood. Because it impacted, if you look at it at accumulated level of the whole year, it's about less than $10. But on the quarter, as a difference, because it was carried out in the last quarter, has an impact of about $30 of a non-cash one-time event in cost. And then we have some other effects of a little bit higher taxes or green taxes that we call taxes on emissions. And other stuff. Then we had another effect in cash cost, which is an increase in transfer price. At the beginning, let's say, of the quarter, the price that we sell from the forestry division to the pulp division was adjusted upwards, about $2 per ton of wood because of market prices. We follow market prices. Market price went up, we raised prices. And that also had an impact on the cost of pulp, because you have to multiply by five times, for example, for softwood, 3.5 times for hardwood, and that is another, let's say, $10 of increase in cash cost, which is a transfer between one division and the other. So on a consolidated basis, it doesn't move anything. And then we have an effect in fixed cost because we produce less. Okay, because of the maintenance. And for the quarter, that could be, in the terms of softwood, was about another $30 of higher fixed cost, let's say maintenance, depreciation, other stuff that increased unitary cost. In the terms of hardwood, the production was a little bit higher, so we didn't have that impact in hardwood. So those were the things that impacted, let's say, cost of production of pulp. And then we have a write-down of forestry roads done in the forestry division of $35 million. Okay, that impacted the forestry EBITDA. Again, a non-cash. But the way we calculate EBITDA, we don't add back that line. So that is a non-cash that went to EBITDA. $35 million. And then we have an impairment done at a joint venture in Sonar Arauco, which is Laminate Park, about $7 million, which is in the affiliates, non-consolidated subsidiaries. And that was compensated by the positive goodwill of $40 million in regarding the Maciza Brazil acquisition. So those were the one-time effects in terms of write-downs and movements that normally affects the end of the year.
Very clear. Thank you for all the detail there.
Thank you.
The next question comes from Carlos de Alba with Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Gianfranco and team. Could you comment as to how much, if any, of the maintenance stoppages scheduled for the first quarter and the second, and the second quarter, which is only one I see, have to do with market conditions, or is only purely maintenance work that has been scheduled in those mills? And my second question, if I may, is on how much of the increase in pulp unitary sales cost that you highlighted on Exhibit 5, almost 13% for sawwood and 10% for hardwood and 7% for unbleached, how much of that on a dollar per ton basis you think is recurrent? And if you could give us a breakdown on the absolute number of cost per ton for the different pulps, that would be great, or at least a range, that would be quite useful.
Okay, the easy one. We haven't done any in the past. I remember I've been with the company 25 years, and we have never done a market stoppage in pulp. So all the stoppages that you see there are maintenance related, that we have to do it because we need to maintain our equipment. So no market stoppages. Our costs are sufficiently low to generate cash, free cash flow in our mills. In terms of the one timers that we all already explained, I will say that though that 12%, let's say only $30, which is less than, let's say, 40% of that, is caused by lower production that impacted fixed cost. You can argue that that is a one-timer also, because we expect to produce on average in a year the same. So it's like a seasonality effect on fixed cost. The rest are the one that I explained. They are a one-timer because of deterioration of fixed assets, and the other one is a transfer price issue, which is not affecting really the whole company. It's just moving income from pulp to forestry. So that is more or less. There are, of course, some minor changes in maintenance because of we have more stoppages. This quarter, probably a slight increase in some chemical costs, but the main part, I would say, it is seasonality or one-time effects. Sorry for that, but I cannot give you the explanation on every meal because I don't have it here, and probably it's a lot of detail from the audience. I think that with this explanation, probably sufficient to see that we shouldn't expect this kind of increases. We should expect decreases in cost. And of course, as a whole year, you will see that the cost should be more or less stable.
Thank you, Gianfranco. I didn't mean to get the cost per meal, but just on the overall sawwood and hardwood at least.
Well, as I already told, the effects on softwood and hardwood,
but on a dollar per ton basis.
Yeah, in dollar per ton, I did it. So just to give you a sense, in softwood, the effect of price transfer is about $10.
Yeah, sure. What I meant is the total absolute unitary cost. If you can share that.
Sorry, you said the impact. Unitary cost.
Not the impact. What is the cost? The unitary cost, sales cost of producing sawwood in Arauco.
Okay, I mean you have to multiply by the total production of that kind of pulp in the quarter. So let me see.
Yeah, no worries. I'll follow up offline. That's fine. Thank you very much.
Yeah, we can give you the number, but it's very easy. Just multiply the number about. 55% is softwood and the rest is hardwood, and of let's say 900,000 tons per year, per quarter, more or less.
All right. Thank you very much. This is useful. Thank you.
The next question comes from Milton Sullivan with XP Asset Management. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you for the questions. I have a couple questions. First of all, I understand it's hard, coming back to pulp inventories. I understand it's hard to know about the level of pulp inventories at your clients, at the paper producers. But do you have a sense if these inventory levels are increasing or not after the Chinese New Year. So are paper producers restocking or are they just buying what they need to produce? This is the first question. And the second question is, looking at the entire market, up until the fourth quarter, we were seeing less sales than production, right? So we were seeing inventory increases. From what you hear from the market, do you think that current demand levels are enough to bring pulp inventory levels down, or only for pulp inventory levels to stop increasing, if you have a sense of that for the entire market? Thank you.
Okay. I don't have the number. You're talking about the trend. You have to consider that the Chinese New Year was in February, so we're still, it's too early to tell, I think. My feeling is that probably the inventories should go down, because now we see the chain moving. I mean, paper producers are selling more, they are consuming more pulp, destocking, and then buying more from the pulp producers. But it's, for me, it's too early, because that happened in February, we are starting March, and so I think we will have more of a sense of if the trend is consolidating, and we will see a reduction in the whole pulp market inventories from those levels of 57 days that we saw in hardwood in the coming month. For that, I think that the Chinese Pulp Week will be crucial. All the conversations and the direct contact with clients that we'll do in a week from now will be very important to get a feeling of the decrease in pulp inventories at the paper level. Of course, that will help decrease the pulp inventory at the producer's level. But I will say that if they are accepting price increases of $30 in 1 month, probably they are destocking, and they will try to go to normal levels of stock.
And just a quick follow-up. Do you think that you said before that the Brazilians being out of the market and increasing inventories a lot were an opportunity for you guys to sell and for a good price environment? From what you hear in the market, do you think that the Brazilians are already back to the market selling the volumes that selling the incremental inventories, or are they still in a standstill with clients?
I don't know. I think you should probably ask them about how they are selling, if they're selling more or holding down to inventory. I will guess that since prices started to go up, probably they are not starting to sell and not increasing inventory, but I don't have the information. We don't know what our competitors are doing. So you should better ask them directly.
Sure. Thank you.
The next question comes from Hernan Kisluk with MetLife. Please go ahead.
Hello, good afternoon. Thank you for taking my question. It's very specific regarding the reduction in debt due to the FX depreciation. So I would like to understand what's the status of the hedges for the debt, given that you issued in October in local currency. Is this debt already hedged? Is unhedged? What's the status there?
Yes, all of our debt issued in local currency is hedged. The different terms, but most of them are until maturity, and so we have all of them hedged. So there's no effect in the net income, but sometimes you see on the balance sheet position the gross, let's say, position in Europe.
Okay, thank you.
The next question comes from Marcio Farid with UBS. Please go ahead.
Hi. Good morning. Good afternoon, everyone. I have a couple of follow-up questions. And sorry if I'm repeating myself here, but do you think, Gianfranco, the clients in China, they are buying on a hand-to-mouth basis, or do you think at this point they are already restocking? Because you mentioned there is a scenario here that they are restocking because they are taking higher prices, but also there is a big producer that is not selling to the market, right? And that's probably why prices are going up as well. So what do you think is the end the end answer here, right? I mean, are they restocking or prices are going up because Suzano is still basically not selling normal volumes? And the second question regarding to dissolving pulp, I mean, we saw prices being under a little bit of pressure recently, and you have your project probably started up by the end of this year. So I just wanted to understand how have been negotiations with potential buyers going, and how long do you think you can take the Valdivia mill to reach full year run rate of reducing dissolving pulp only? That will be all. Thank you.
Yeah, again, it's very difficult to see if our clients is going to buy more of the normal levels that they buy because of willing to restock facing higher prices in the future. Probably there's something going on that. I don't know where the level they are starting, but if I was a paper producer, I would try to buy more because prices, we see that prices will probably go up. I mean, if you look at the long-term perspective, looking at the coming 2 or 3 years where we don't have any new capacity coming in, we should see higher prices. So this could be an opportunity to buy at a relative low prices. So that something could be going on. But I don't have the exact number to see if that's already happening or not. We will see until the end of March and April if we see more appetite for buying more volume than normal to restock or increase stocks, looking at the curve that is going up in terms of pricing. Now, regarding the dissolving pulp, we are just talking with clients. We are not negotiating prices, of course, but because the mill is going to be ready to produce at the end of the year, that doesn't mean that we will start producing dissolving pulp at the end of the year. We will probably make some paper-grade pulp in 2020. We still have time to assess that. It will depend on the quality that we are doing, the conversation with clients, the relative price, and things like that. So we're just talking with clients, doing visits, knowing about the quality that they need, but we're not negotiating any volumes at any prices at this point.
The next question comes from Leopoldo Silva with Lorraine Vial. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, Gianfranco and Arauco team. My question is regarding the revaluation of biological assets. So the last eight quarters, we've seen much lower revaluation of your assets, and that would seem that in your calculations, you're expecting lower revenues or cash flows from them. But in turn, you just said prices of wood are going up or have gone up. So what should we expect regarding this line that in turn impacts your net income afterwards? And your calculations have been done over all of your forest mass or just a portion of them? Can you please clarify some of that, please?
Yes, of course. I mean, the valuation of the forest is basically, it moves by the margins, let's say prices minus cost, the stock that you have, I mean, the growing of your plantation biologically, and of course the discount rate. So those things need to be assessed every year. So what is important is the margin here. So if prices could be going up, but if costs are also going up because of different reasons, that could hurt margins. In our case, what we the analysis we did, and this was very detailed, we analyzed all of our forests everywhere, and we made adjustments in Argentina, in Brazil, and in Chile, some positives, some negatives. We're looking at not only our expectation of cost and pricing, but also on assessing the real inventory that we had. So we went up directly and looking at if we had one parcel of forest that on a model set planted with pruned logs, that was really pruned logs, and with that very detailed. So we made adjustments in the stocks, cost margins, and we also did an adjustment in the discount rate, lowering a little bit because We had lower rates, long-term rates, and we have a model that takes into account the expectation of rates and everything. So we had very detailed analysis of our model, and that the net effect on the adjustments were the ones that we're showing on the financial statements. But it's not only increases in price, of course, that we have seen increases in price, but also there's some increases in cost.
Right, thanks. And what do you expect going forward? Have you ended doing this, or should we continue seeing this and maybe get back to the 2015 levels or stay on the recent levels?
I mean, you always have to review what we are doing. I mean, we did a very, very detailed work this time. So I will guess that we don't have any big adjustments in the coming years. But you never know, because things change, interest rates, some of the parameters in your models. But as a lookout in the physical assets, in all the costs, roads, administrative costs, everything, we did a very, very good job this year. So last year, at the end of the year. So I would guess that we won't have any big adjustments for some time.
Okay, thanks very much, Gianfranco.
This concludes the question and answer session. At this time, I would like to turn the floor back to Mr. Gianfranco Truffello for any closing remarks.
Okay, thank you everyone again for attending this call. Our next meeting should be more or less at the end of May, so we will review in the first quarter of 2019 numbers. In the meantime, if you have any doubt about the numbers or any other question, don't hesitate to call our investment relations team, and we'll be happy answering your questions. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you. This concludes today's presentation. You may disconnect your lines at this time, and have a nice day.